Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Leighton DeGranty University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of January 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Ed Kieser. He'll take a special look at South America for us. And along the way, we'll hear Daryl Good's review of Monday's USDA reports, what they truly might mean for the marketplace in his opinion. It's a really interesting conversation. So stay with us as we make our way through this Friday edition of our agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check in on the numbers as they finished up on this Friday afternoon in Chicago. March corn at $3.87 a gain today, up 7 cents. May futures $3.94 and a quarter, up 7. And July at $4.01, up 7 and a half. September at $4.06 and three quarters, 7 and a quarter higher. In December of next year, that's at $4.14 and three quarters. The new crop corn up 7 and a quarter cents on the day. Soy complex bean futures $9.91 and three quarters. The lead option March up 3 quarters. May at $9.97 and a half, up a quarter. July down a quarter at $10.03. August $10.02 and a half, down a quarter of a cent. And the November beans are new crop at $9.75 and a quarter, 1 and 1 quarter lower. Bean meal futures at $3.26.20, down 50 cents for the day. And the bean oil at $33.39, up 40 cents on the afternoon. Chicago wheat at $5.32.60, unchanged. July at $5.38 and a quarter, down a penny and 3 quarters. And the Kansas City contract finished at $5.77 in the March, up 4 cents. July or the harvest month there for the hard red winter at $5.82 and three quarters, up 2 and a quarter. Live cattle futures at $154.85, 65 cents higher. April at 153 and 7 and a half, that's up 27 and a half. Feeder cattle futures at $214.92 and a half, down 72 and a half in the lead. January, the March at 207 and 7 and a half cents, $1.47 and a half higher. Lean hogs on the day finished at $74.30, down $1.32 and a half in the February. You're listening to Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. January has been cold so far, with temperatures running 6 degrees below average. However, warmer weather is coming soon. Besides snow, we have seen a lot of rain and freezing rain in January. As a result, the amount of water falling on Illinois in January is 1.3 inches and 40% above average. The latest seasonal outlooks from the National Weather Service came out on Thursday. There's nothing much to report for Illinois. They have removed the forecast for colder and drier conditions for the upcoming months, but we do see an increased chance of above-average temperatures in the April, May, June timeframe. The National Weather Service forecast for this weekend and next week indicates a quiet week ahead. Saturday will be in the warmest day, with highs ranging from the 40s in the north to the 50s in the south for the state. For Sunday through Wednesday, highs will range from the low 30s in northern Illinois to the upper 40s and low 50s in the south. Thursday will be a little colder, with highs ranging from the 20s in the north to the upper 30s in the south. Overnight lows for the week will range from the low 20s in the north to the freezing mark in the south. Northern Illinois does have a chance of snow late on Sunday. Otherwise, there's no significant precipitation expected for the week. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for agricultural weather comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Busey supports small businesses and entrepreneurs to bring vibrancy to the local economy. Busey, your dream, our promise. Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Let's check in with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas, to take up what's been happening in the marketplace for the week. Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Well, Todd, I couldn't be any better. It's a balmy 57 degrees out here right now.
I have been outside. It's not nearly that warm here, but it's in that mid-30 range, and the sun is shining. It's a beautiful day. It feels really great after the very, very cold weather we've had. The marketplace, I guess, responded a little bit, at least in the corn, because it managed to finish this Friday higher for the week. How did it do for the week, by the way?
Still down on the week, and December corn, as a matter of fact, down about 6 3/4 on the week, and keeping very close track of the new crop, obviously, because of the January report and getting close to those February crop insurance numbers. I think those outside markets really split the feed grains pretty much wide open, while the soybeans kind of remain shackled by those export cancellations from China. But crude oil was up 5%. It did close this week on a positive note in the lead month, March. I think that allowed the ethanol and especially the unleaded to really help the corn a lot. We saw the unleaded jump over 4% on the day following the crude, and the ethanol was up about 3%. And interesting to note, the ethanol is hitting or has hit, as of the end of this week, a 9-year low. And so it's really taken a beating thanks to the crude oil, and I think thanks to obviously the dollar too. And also we are seeing some stocks build, but we're still only about at 1-year stocks levels. In other words, we're no higher than we were about November, December of last year. So 9-year low in price and only at the 1-year highs as far as stocks. I think the corn was ready to turn higher once the ethanol got the pressure let off of it from the crude.
Hey, can you talk a little bit about the crude? I know we've discussed over the previous months with you, with Daryl Good, with others, kind of the new price plateau for corn, what the midpoint might be. I don't know what you're thinking about the midpoint for corn might be, but maybe you have a new midpoint for where crude ought to be. I know it's probably not in the $112 or $150 barrel area. So.
It might have been the midpoint in 2007 at $112. No, I think that $75 a barrel would be an equilibrium point for me. A lot of the people that I really respect, Jim O'Neill, the old Goldman Sachs guy that came up with the term BRICS, he had an article out this week talking about crude oil analysis specifically, and as an analyst, I really enjoyed it. And he said, after all these years of doing all this modeling, the best price indicator for him has been the 5-year forward price, which is about $20 to $25 higher, around the mid-60s is the last time I looked at it late this week. And so my equilibrium price is pretty close to that, around $75 for the New York crude, Todd. And I think what has happened is this last $20 to $25 slide has been directly related to the currencies and directly related to monetary policy, not as much related to the shale boom and what OPEC has decided to do to try and go after the shale producers in North America.
Oh, that's an interesting tidbit. That means that you're of a mind then that even at this supply level, which is pretty hefty, we might be in need of being a little higher. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at right now, because what happened in November and December? Well, what happened was the OPEC issue came out, but obviously the big thing was Russia. And the fact that Russia's ruble collapsed with the crude oil put the currencies, I think, at a much higher level of importance in the actual price action, what determines the prices. And so my take is that you are already shutting down rigs. We had a second week in a row of a big amount of rigs shut down in the Gulf of Mexico for oil and natural gas. It was the second largest weekly drop in, I think, about 14 or 15 years. So price of barrel of crude is already starting to cut off new exploration. and it's already starting to hurt the Canadian shale producers as of some of the most recent IMF data and some of the other Bank of Canada data that I've been looking at this last week or two.
All right, let's turn your attention directly to the marketplace. I want to deal with new crop corn at this point. Farmers probably are beginning to think a little bit about it. $4.14¾ was the settlement price. Does this seem like a good level for this crop at this time?
I think you could be higher, but I think you aren't going to get higher unless the wheat offsets the soybeans. I think that's the best way to look at it. And going back to, I hope people tune into the Commodity Week program that you did with us yesterday, because I thought it was one of the best in probably a year. And my take is that you can't expect a soybean low in price until you get that crude bottom and until you get that dollar top in price. And even then, you have to be ready and accept the idea that the beans are probably going to be under pressure. And I think today's cancellations by China is a real big wake-up call that, look, they will cancel if they think prices are going lower because they think they bought them too high to begin with. So my take right now, Todd, is that you do want to hedge corn if you can't stop the declines. And I've put a line in the sand for lead month corn at that 375 level. That's the 100-day moving average is at 377. We tested 376 this week a couple times for lows. The major closing low since the October time period of last year has been around 375¼. So you don't want 375 March futures to be taken out on a daily basis, because if you do, you have to open your downside up to about 335 to 340 on the weekly chart. And that opens your new crop price up to 380, 375. And I've told many clients this week, I can defend $4 sales in cash sales, or close to $4 cash sales. I cannot defend 350, because they're literally going to be out of money and not be able to defend those with options or futures.
All right. Do you have kind of a same defensive mechanism for soybeans?
Well, the soybeans have already cracked the downside. We have a major low at the December 5th low in March beans of 983¾. If you crack that, then you're looking at 915 to 925. And I had several conversations Wednesday, yesterday, and today since the report kind of got into the producers' minds. Okay, what if I sell beans here for new crop, which it's still profitable, but what if I sell at a low profit level per acre, and I'm wrong, excuse me, and the market goes back up? Well, that's where I go back to, then the corn market should be leading you higher, and your revenue per acre on corn can help offset that pretty nicely.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Have a great weekend.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzlow. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting and joins us on our Commodity Week program. You can hear that on this radio station a bit later in the hour, on many of our other radio stations tomorrow morning, and always online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Energy Information Administration says that the ethanol industry closed 2014 by setting weekly production records in four of the final 5 weeks of the year. The nation's leading ethanol-producing state, Iowa, produced 3.9 billion gallons in 2014 at its 43 plants, up from 3.7 billion gallons the previous 3 years. But increased ethanol availability and falling gasoline prices have caused ethanol prices to plummet by more than 70 cents per gallon in recent weeks. Ethanol prices are expected to hover between $1.50 and $1.60 per gallon on the futures market in early 2015. Private analytical firm Informa Economics expects farmers to plant nearly equal corn and soybean acres in 2015 at 88.6 million for corn and 88 million for soybeans. The corn estimate is nearly 2 million acres lower than the year prior, while the soybean estimate is 4.3 million acres higher. Informa's latest acreage report is based on a survey of producers conducted in early January. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program comes up immediately following this one on our home radio station. That's WILL AM 580. On many of these other radio stations tomorrow morning and on our website right now at willag.org. It's WILLAG.org. Our special guest today is Dr. Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Now, let's turn our attention to those USDA reports released earlier in the week. I spoke with Darrell Good about them and asked him what he saw that was different in the reports.
You know, the reports that came out on January 12th, the final production estimates for last year's crop, December 1 stocks number, and also the winter wheat seedings report, all released on the same day. If we look at the corn numbers, I think, you know, there was a surprise that USDA lowered its yield estimate by 2.4 bushels down to 171. A few analysts looking for that, but certainly that was well below the average trade guess, resulting in a smaller crop production estimate by about 190 million bushels. So you say taken alone, that was probably a fairly friendly report for corn. But as I mentioned, we also got the December 1 stocks number that showed 11.2 billion bushels of corn on hand as of December 1. And even with the smaller production estimate, that stock estimate was larger than the market expected. And so when you start backing out the numbers, that says that feed and residual use of corn during the first quarter was not nearly as large as the market was looking for. This is a bit complicated in comparing it to last year because USDA also revised last year's production number and lowered the first quarter feed use a year ago by 96 million bushels. So even though feed use was 96 million less a year ago than the market thought it was, this year's number was even smaller, and as a result, the shortfall, I think, was really termed pretty bearish by the market, and it did result in the USDA lowering its forecast of feed and residual use for the year by 100 million bushels. So you say that's not a big change, but I think the message taken away from the reports as a whole was now we're at January, we're through the 4 months of the marketing year, we're confirming adequate stocks of corn, rationing is not going to be required at any point this year. And then you put on top of that what I see as kind of some general macroeconomic bearishness that's creeped into the market. We've seen crude oil prices obviously coming down sharply. More recently, the stock market coming down. People pointing to metals prices, particularly copper, which is perhaps kind of an indicator of commercial demand, industrial demand, and saying all these things really don't point to a real robust world economy. The dollar continuing to strengthen just a little bit. And I think, so on top of, I think on net, what was kind of an unfriendly December stocks number on corn, you've got this general concern about world economies. And we've seen a pretty good sell-off in corn prices following the report. I think we're probably now reached a new equilibrium that's maybe 20 cents lower than before the report. But certainly 20 cents is a big change in this kind of corn price environment.
And I was adding all those numbers and subtracting them in my head, and we were this close to 300 or 400 million bushels disappearing, and actually there were only, 121 million bushels at the end of the day, at the ending stocks number. Still, that's lower than what we had in the previous month.
It is lower, and you know, on the surface, you say if nothing else had changed, that might be a little bit supportive. But I think the message that the market took away is, yeah, it's a little bit lower, but it's certainly not a shortage, and we've got adequate supplies, and so there's really nothing to worry about at this point in terms of making it through to another harvest. And so perhaps there was a little bit of a euphoria built into prices going into the reports. USDA, for example, did not lower its corn acreage number as much as some thought. If that had happened along with the lower yield number, then I think we could have seen some fireworks on the upside following the report, but that did not happen.
First blush on the soybean numbers were a little different story. They really did tell you, hey, wait a second, things are building up more than maybe we thought, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The soybean production number was essentially unchanged from the previous number, raised 11 million bushels. The market was looking on average at a 13 million bushel increase, which is not large. But the surprising thing is that the December stocks of soybeans was much smaller than one would have guessed based on the crop size and known use during the first quarter of the year. We had census numbers on exports. We had NOPA crush numbers, so we knew those numbers very carefully. But what the stocks number said was we had a lot of unexplained disappearance of soybeans in the first quarter. Just put that in perspective, a year ago, first quarter feed, seed, and residual use of soybeans was 220 million bushels, which was a record unexplained disappearance for the first quarter. This year, it's 280 million bushels. And so the stocks number was actually nearly 70 million bushels less than the market expected, but that certainly did not generate any bullish response because USDA really did not change their forecast of feed, seed, and residual use for the year and left their year-ending stocks at 410 million bushels. So I think that's what the market focused on is, yeah, we got through the January reports and we're still looking at a 400 million bushel carryover. Oh, by the way, in the meantime, we raised the estimated size of the Brazilian crop by 55 million bushels. Today we get the December NOPA crush number. It wasn't quite as large as what the market had hoped it would be. And then, as I mentioned on corn, you throw in kind of the negative psychology about the world economic situation. And frankly, I think many people have thought all along that soybean prices were a little stout, that if we really were going to have a 400 million bushel carryover, you know, $10 to $10.50 beans was pretty stout. And now we're seeing, I think, some recalibration there. Prices have probably made a permanent turn towards the lower levels.
And does that mean a 10 or a 9 for soybeans?
We're going to be in the 9s, I think, going forward from here. And the real question is how low in the 9s will that be? And I suspect we'll find some support near term because we are seeing ongoing good export demand for soybeans. Both weekly shipments and new sales are quite good. But longer term, if we do get this expected increase in soybean acreage here in the U.S., I think that would be the kind of the final blow to soybeans that would start pushing us to some of the lower levels.
And the winter wheat seedings tell us there are available acres.
It really does. We saw winter wheat seedings down about 1.9 million, a big drop in Illinois, for example, and on other soft red winter acres that suggest corn, soybeans will replace that winter wheat. And right now, I think many people are thinking soybeans rather than corn. And if that's confirmed in the March planting intentions report, I think that'll be another bit of a blow to the soybean market, suggesting another year of potentially very large crop.
I think the Illinois number's dropping from, 750,000 to 550,000.
Right. Just over a quarter decline, which is, it's not huge acreage, but percentage-wise, it is large, and then that was seen in other soft red winter states as well.
Thank you.
That's Darrell Good.
Support comes from AgriGold. Celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Fig Newton Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1853, André Michelin was born. A French industrialist, he, along with his younger brother, founded the Michelin Tire Company in 1888. Among their many contributions, introducing tire tread patterns, low-pressure balloon tires, and steel cord tires. In 1868, William Davis, a Detroit, Michigan fish dealer, received a patent for the first refrigerated railway car or reefer. His car employed metal racks to suspend the carcasses above a frozen mixture of ice and salt. The cars railed meat to Boston using ice from the Great Lakes for cooling. But the car had a tendency at high speeds to decouple from the train, and their use was discontinued after several derailments. Davis's design ultimately was trumped by that of Andrew Chase, whose design kept the meat tightly packed at the bottom of the car to lower its center of gravity. That design was ultimately put into production by Swift and Company. In 1973, NBC aired the 440th and final showing of Bonanza. And in 1985, Leonard Nimoy received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. By the way, one of our favorite Star Trek episodes revolved around a special type of grain resembling wheat in The Trouble with Tribbles. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
This agricultural program is a production of Illinois Public Media.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Last week, our focus was on a stagnant weather pattern that would continue to bring dry weather to many northern production areas of Brazil and heavy rains to southern Brazil into northern and central Argentina. That pattern indeed did hold this week and is expected to last for at least several more days. Areas of extreme dryness and extreme wetness are growing. Of course, extreme weather is typically not good for crops. The driest areas are in northeast, southeast, and eastern portions of center-west Brazil. Little to no rain has fallen in this area since Christmas, including Goiás, Bahia, and Minas Gerais. Moisture deficits for the past month are averaging around 8 inches. First crop corn and soybeans in this area are rapidly becoming stressed and yield losses are likely starting to occur. Hot and dry weather will continue across this area through early next week. Then some relief is in the forecast starting during the middle of next week as a cold front approaches from Argentina. That front should trigger scattered thunderstorms. Rainfall will not be enough to erase moisture deficits that have built up in the past month, but some rain is better than none. The big question is what comes beyond next week. There are indications that occasional thunderstorms will occur, but overall rainfall amounts will remain below average. In neighboring Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, and Sao Paulo, rainfall has also been below average during the past month, but occasional thunderstorms have prevented dryness from becoming as extreme. This area would benefit from more rain, and that is in the forecast starting during the middle of next week. Now to the wet areas. The jet stream has been parked over or near South Brazil and northern and central Argentina in recent weeks. That has resulted in frequent heavy rainfall. Fields in Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil, and much of northern and central Argentina are waterlogged. More heavy rainfall is expected in the coming week, increasing chances of crop damage. Not all major production areas of Argentina are excessively wet. Some key areas in Cordoba, southern Santa Fe, and southern Entre Rios have had plentiful but not excessive rainfall. Those areas should stay fine in the coming week. Finally, southern crop areas of Argentina have been trending drier lately and are in need of some rain. Rain is now returning with the best chance on Sunday. Southern Argentina should avoid dryness becoming extreme. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Tug Gleason, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find all kinds of information, including a way to purchase your tickets, just $25 for our March 10th All-Day Ag Outlook. Those tickets are on sale now. You can dial in at 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300. Tickets are just $25. They won't last long, so you should dial in right now.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.